The next encounter. On the 23rd December, while sleeping at the hotel comma where he had arranged the UFO course, a communication entered. The extraterrestrials ordered me to a certain place in the early morning. A few hours later, with such short notice, there was no opportunity to notify the people registered in the course. I got up, told the receptionist that I had to leave at 3 a.m., and asked him to please wake me up if I fell asleep. I was told not to bring a tape recorder or camera. The trip was going to last about 5 days. Where were they planning to take me for all that time? I thought the destination could be a nearby planet. Both excited and anguished, I hailed a taxi in front of the hotel. It was almost 3 a.m. We started for the town of El Jinquito, a tourist location before Colonia Tovar, a picturesque town high in the Venezuelan Andes, with many residents of German ancestry, which is about 25 kilometers from Caracas. There is a cutoff before Colonia Tovar, at the road to Cariaca. The driver, a Spaniard from Madrid, was a little reticent to engage in conversation at first, but finally we discussed various subjects. Upon arriving at the meeting place, I got out of the cab and paid him, adding an extra tip. It was for 11 a.m. and cold. I walked another half kilometer on the road, and then into a ravine. I waited for the indicated hour. A craft suddenly materialized a few meters above ground level, swinging from side to side and projecting a tenuous light downwards. This one was the classic flying saucer, 6 or 7 meters in diameter and 3 meters high, including its dome with an astounding symmetry in shape. It moved harmoniously, swinging smoothly in complete silence. The nocturnal darkness blended with the ghostly presence of the alien craft. It landed about 40 meters from where I stood, a tripod slid down, then a ladder was visible, and a navigator stepped to the ground. He signaled me to approach. I glanced at my watch. It was 4:27 a.m. on the 24th of December, 1974. While Cyril, who was the navigator who met me, and I greeted each other, he informed me that we were to visit a base in the Andes, where we were to receive the information promised during one of the telepathic contacts some months before. Crunula and a stranger, whose name he told me, but I have not been able to remember, were on board. While the craft flew, my first son with Gloria was being born in Bogota, which I learned later, through a telephone call I made from Caracas to Bogota on January 19, 1975. He was baptized Orhi and Yamrik, born at 4:33 a.m. on December 24, 1974. Months afterwards we recalled Orhian's words, when Gloria was less than 2 months pregnant, that he would be born between the 23rd and the 25th of December. How could he have known it with such accuracy? We arrived at our destination, a town in the middle of the high and millennial Andes of South America. I thought we were to arrive at a city, but it was a small town, with a good extent of land, as I would find out in a few hours. The flight took only 20 minutes. Thousands of kilometers in such a short time. Incredible, and as usual, I could not detect a single motion or discomfort. This time I was not sprayed as the previous times, when they did it for a kind of disinfection. I forgot to ask them why. While I'm used, Cyril exclaimed, "Look, Enrique, below were the majestic Andes, and, at the tip of one of the mountains, the arrangement of the buildings was clearly visible." Cyril told me that the inhabitants called this place the Vortex of the Andes. "What inhabitants?" I asked. Cyril answered, "Yes, Enrique, at the moment there are 318 people here, who for many years, even entire families, have been contacted and brought here voluntarily. Here they live, work, study, and learn. They are instructed about the great events that humanity will experience, the teachings of the law, so that it will prevail. Many of them will be trained to help when the moment arrives. Nobody will know who instructed them, and besides, nobody would believe them. It could even be dangerous for them. This place, at about 3,200 meters above sea level, is located between two great mountains that give natural protection against blizzards and frosts, and is known as Alto Peru, Peru Highlands. Picture of similar high place town, here Machu Picchu. I am under the impression that the place is closer to Bolivia than to Peru. It was still dark when we landed. It was impressive to see how the disc flew closely between steep mountain slopes, and then landed softly on a platform and slid into the mountain, perhaps through hydraulic means penetrating in through a horizontal tunnel. After climbing down to ground level, we walked to an office where I was asked to take off my sweater and shirt. What surprised me pleasantly was the temperature, about 16 degrees Celsius, similar to Bogota, where I had lived for many years. The next day I was able to verify this point. The people getting ready to give me a brief check up were not extraterrestrial, just ordinary people, except that they used some devices unknown to me. The first test was routine: heart, blood pressure, reflexes, lungs, vision, hearing, etc. They asked me my city of origin and consulted a listing. They wrote down something and asked me if I had with me tape recorders or cameras. I answered no. They asked me to take my watch off temporarily. They placed a yellow band on my left wrist, and the watch was moved to the right arm. At the end of the examination, another Terran took me to the room where I was going to live during my stay. When I went out, somebody followed us quickly. Apparently there had been a mistake. They explained that the wristband's color had to do with the type of food that I should eat. Finally, I was taken to my temporary bedroom, leaving the comfortable and well-ventilated underground tunnel through the point where we had entered. Once in my bedroom, I rested on a simple but comfortable bed. I thought I was going to see a city of the future, but the buildings were wooden, sort of Canadian-type cabins, with smooth and well-cut but rustic beams and boards. The floor of the corridor leading to the bedroom was polished wood. The great rectangular cabin had two rows of bedrooms, on both sides of its central passageway. I will omit other details to center on the essentials. Up to then, I thought that I was the only guest at the Vortex. When they announced breakfast, I had not slept. I was restless as to why I had been taken so far, and to what mission I was to be assigned. It was 6:45 a.m., and I had been there almost 2 hours. The fellow who picked me up was surely of Incan descent. I followed him to the dining room. Surprise! Six more people waited there, having arrived before me. Others would arrive in an hour or so. These contactees came from 19 different countries, and 11 were Latin. There was only one woman among us. There was an individual self-introduction. No names were given, just the countries of origin. Now I knew the meaning of the colored wristbands. All wore them, some different, some of similar colors. Each was to eat from the trays marked with the same color as the wristbands. Instructor number 1, there were 4. Told us that the food had been prepared according to geographic zone. Their ionization was different, according to the elevation above sea level. This way it prevented illnesses from occurring on this account. Another difficult, to handle aspect was the altitude. I was one of the 4 older visitors. Some received oxygen upon arrival, after which they felt okay. I felt a bit of Sirosh, altitude sickness. We were given warm, probably goat, milk, honey bread, and some delicious biscuits, freshly baked. The instructor called our attention from the head of one of the tables. I was sitting along one side of it. He gave us the reasons we were there. Each one would be given privileged information. The information should be treated with utmost care, and we were to be very careful as to who would receive it, either orally or in writing. Further serious recommendations were to be given to us later. The instructor told us that grave events were taking place in various fields, which would lead the planet to undergo, with its occupants, untoward experiences of several types. Our presence in that place had the objective of transmitting to the public, through various means, the occurrences that will take place and culminate in several momentous events. For personal reasons, I do not give out an account of the calamities announced by the instructors. They had information covering many years as to how the facts will unwind. They had a very clear picture of all this, known to all of the inhabitants of the Vortex. The extraterrestrials, through documented and adequate scientific means, had transmitted this astounding information. And we were not given all the information. Some reports were not transmitted. Only in case of emergency would they be given. We were informed, through personal contact, the instructor subtly led us to understand, between the lines, as it were, that the Pleiadians would make the final decisions. we were told that the withholding of certain information from us at that time was intended to protect us from any danger. This dialogue took place by telepathic induction. The instructor told us that this was a technique obtained over several years of learning, because only one of the terrestrial instructors had natural abilities, which had been perfected by the extraterrestrials. This ended the presentation. Afterwards, we walked, enjoying the magnificent view from that fabulous place high in the Andes. We listened to the howling of the wind, clearly perceptible at some places, which was a bone-chilling temperature. We were able to see a great contraption projecting from the mountain, with fins and crystals. We were told that energy is thus captured for the whole community, and that there is another energy source for the appliances and lighting. One of the energy sources was used for powering a magnetic shield or camouflage of the base and its climate-controlled environment. I knew it. I could see it. It was an example of technology used for the benefit of all. We saw fields cultivated with legumes, strawberries, and other fruits. I had seen earlier some tropical fruits at the breakfast table, and had wondered to myself about who provided them with oranges, pineapples, and coconuts. All was managed uniformly. The residents worked, studied, investigated, and learned. They knew history better than students at colleges and universities. I asked myself how I might adapt if I stayed on to live with them. There was time for leisure. Some slept, and others lounged in the convertible swinging chairs of the corridor of the great cabin. The aroma of chrysanthemums, violets, and forget-me-not suffused the atmosphere with peace and quiet, as if the world had ground to a halt. Isolated from all haste and hassle, we felt we had entered a veritable Shangri-La. Lunch was delicious, compassed of a great variety of legumes and greens, with fruit on top. The instructor told us to take a look at the spoons and eating utensils. They were wooden. He explained that each one should take the foods marked with the color of their wristband. Tomatoes and peppers were served whole, complete with the skin. When eating, we were to cut them with the wooden knives, and do the same with the rest of the foods. We were told that, when cutting them with a metal instrument, a chemical change takes place, producing a loss in the vitamin content. With the wooden knives, the complete content was preserved. Wonderful, said some. It was announced that the following morning we would witness a special event. A very important being was to talk to us. We should just listen. The whole population of the base would be present. The speaker was not identified. The announcement was repeated until the information was clear. We retired to exchange views of all kinds. The Mexican doctor was very cheerful, even funny. With others we communicated through sign language and a little English. It was a rather laughable situation. Among the Latins, only with the two Brazilians, did we have a little trouble language-wise. In the afternoon, fully rested, I was called from my room by the same native that I had met upon arrival. He took me to a pleasant small living room. Cyril entered smiling, and we greeted each other as old friends. He was not wearing a uniform, just cotton trousers, a sporty shirt, and a wool sweater. Come here, Enrique, sit here, he said, pointing to a chair. It was 5 p.m. Take some paper and write what I am going to dictate. On a table there were paper, ballpoint pens, and pencils. 6 more contactees arrived. It is up to you whether or not to divulge what we are teaching you. If you don't, you will not be blamed. The instructions were the same for all. All 7 contactees took up paper and pens and got ready to listen to the dictation. This was the message dictated by Krishnamurti, from the Pleiades, scientist and liaison officer on Earth, member of the Great Solar Cosmic Brotherhood, at 5 p.m. on the 24th of December, 1974. Message to the world. Plan A in its 3 phases to all the inhabitants of the planet called Earth, to all my beloved brothers, whatever their origin, color or social condition, to all those who cannot yet listen to or understand the voice of eternal truth, we announce to you a better world, where a new mind will prevail and take you to true spiritual love, where you will live in the true science of the Spirit, light, law for the children of the planet, where all the opponents of the great cosmic plan shall be vanquished, and supreme harmony or greater absolute law will be the daily bread for all men. Most beloved brothers, you will have a clear mind and a great decision to make about this knowledge that is given to you. you will know how to make the right decisions with great wisdom in the face of the contrary forces that have been unchained against this plan. The mere fact of bringing you here has already implied the presence of a great counter-movement to establish negative forces with the intention of making us fail of rejecting, and not heeding the true, and elevated teachings that give birth to the highest and sacred elevation, the elevation of the spirit. If you work with love, the opposition is condemned to defeat. If you follow the good behavior commandments, you will be protected. If you stand by truth, yours is the victory and the compensation of living in a better world. All the sacred principles that have been given to man, since his pre-existence, must stay with him, and you and the men of goodwill and clear conscience will fight for them with the weapons of truth and justice. Be aware of the protection given to you by the universal force of love, dispensed only by the great solar logos and members of the planetary hierarchies. Become, then, planters of good seed. Prepare your brothers, administering patiently and wisely the information. Prepare them in groups or individually, according to your best judgment and rightful discrimination. Disseminate the seeds, look for good soil, but if it does not exist, go to the countryside and talk to the workers. Search for those who want to listen, and go wherever you are called. Do not look at their clothing or dwellings. Pay attention only to their wish to learn, and deliver the information without adding or removing anything, with a didactic criteria. May the firm wish to propagate the truth embrace you, and for this purpose, brace yourselves and deliver only what has been given you, and if you give more, make sure it is with a genuine wish to spread in a more ample range, the truth only. Phase 1. In 1958, the U.S. Air Force admitted that the Strategic Air Command bombers had been hurled more than once against Russia, when the defense radar detected mysterious objects, which have never been identified, and which flew in apparent formation. It was proven that the attacks were not justified, but the danger is even worse at the present time. This information from the U.S. Air Force makes it clear that nuclear war can start by accident or error, through confusion of our ships with rockets from a foreign power against the U.S. It is positively known that our ships can initiate a war, when detected by the radar network, due to the degree of tension and fear between the different countries. Countermeasures have already been taken, both on the part of our ships and the governments of the countries who study the presence of our fleets of spaceships. This phase is not difficult to explain, and even less to understand. The important aspect is that our ships are systematically making cautious appearances in the airspaces above all nations, especially those whose technological, military, and technical advancement are such that they are bound to observe us. We have done this for a long time, to create a clear indication of our presence among you. The recklessness of the governments of two terrestrial countries has been obvious, when they have ordered their combat pilots to attack our space and scout ships, as soon as they are detected in their radar. This is highly dangerous for the crew members of your airplanes, because if they approach our gravitational field, their engines and control become inoperative. In this way, several have lost their lives because of extreme stubbornness and stupidity. They do not seem to understand that our orders are clear not to harm their craft, otherwise, at least 50 of their planes would have been destroyed. We are aware that many high-ranking military personnel and scientists have been silenced under the pretense of endangering the security of their countries, if public statements were to be made. This is another serious mistake of those governments. If we had any ambition or desire to conquer this planet, we would have done it 300 years ago, when the population could not have opposed any resistance. Even now, it would not be difficult to do. This phase is alternative. We shall continue making appearances, landings, contacts, all over the world, more and more frequently, as planned. You will be responsible for the education of the people in the different countries. This preparation and divulgation can be carried out using all means available. Radio, TV, press conferences, meetings, individual and group talks, pamphlets, etc. This is a difficult task, because you will be left to your own means and time. Besides, you will have against you those who do not take this seriously, and the dark machinations of the great established powers on your planet, hampering, creating doubts and attacking you as promoters of this knowledge. In many instances, they will use the weak of mind and spirit, opposing that which has been established. This will be the most powerful weapon of the enemies of the great purposes of the planetary hierarchies for the evolutionary development of your planet. You must know well these men. They are unconscious instruments of those powerful organizations, which take advantage of their weak minds to spread false rumors and postulates that cause only confusion and uncertainty. Stay alert. Know them with your wise judgment. Do not permit that wrongful, doctrinarian winds carry you away from the elevation of mind and spirit, where the supreme truth and only source of knowledge guide men towards equity, rectitude, and justice, sheltered by the universal government of love, in which all men, I am talking about universal man, receive for their own evolution this absolute vibration to achieve the peace and justice that already prevails in other worlds, and which must triumph with your help, on your own planet. Help for the planet, Phase 2. When the conclusion was reached, after many years of observation and analysis of your world, that its inhabitants should have assistance in order to advance in the cosmic evolutionary scale, there was a moment when, according to the available information, a final conclusion was reached, after seeing the ferocity with which men continuously waged war, how they mercilessly ignited cities with incendiary bombs, how they destroyed and tortured men, women, and children, and how the governments and spiritual leaders showed no concern, and witnessed the starvation of children, both during peacetime as during wartime. The conclusion was that humankind, with few exceptions, were a barbarian horde, sanguinary and bloodthirsty, from the deepest levels of their spirit, and utterly incorrigible. Nevertheless, because of the merit of a few, it was favored with assistance to combat effectively the unscrupulous seekers of riches and power, who, sheltered by the same forces already mentioned, took unfair advantage and plunged other men and their own brothers into extremes of chaos and violence. We are aware of the enemy's strength. We know when, and with what weapons it fights. At this time, the circle is closing around it. The enemy knows it, and in its desperation to survive, it will take Earth and its inhabitants to a final showdown, along with its standard bearers, whole peoples and tribes to their self-destruction. Phase 3. This phase involves direct help to many men, instructing them. It requires in many cases their evacuation from this planet, to a special place where they will be provided with a new conscience to be transmitted afterwards to their fellow men on Earth. These men, on account of their values and courage, are elected to help the world through this great task. The disappearances of such people from Earth have already begun. With your help in this new dawn, surely many will glimpse this future world and become very important factors in this struggle where the two forces are facing each other. All those who have been instructed in the beginner stages will be given frequent telepathic instruction. We will seek these people earnestly. In many cases, personal contacts will be required. There will be dimensional projections, and they will receive strength and spiritual assistance. This procedure holds the key to the future of your planet. Your brother Krishnamurk, scientist from the Pleiades, member of the Great Solar Cosmic Brotherhood. During the dictation, we seldom had to ask him to repeat, because he was extremely clear. The funny thing is that while dictating, he held in his left hand a gadget the size of his fist, which he operated with his thumb. It must have been a decoder or screen, perhaps an advanced kind of teleprompter, from which he read the text to be given. At the end, no one asked about it. Today, such small portable PC/laptops are not unknown on Earth. Remember also that the most of today's modern technology is taken/stolen from crashed UFOs, especially in USA, where private firms later have taken the ideas as their own, and this is not only claims, many off-jumpers have now disclosed this. Michael Wolf. Roll remark. We were given a break. The day was ending, and we had exchanged opinions. Cyril came to look for me before nightfall. He told me that he was authorized to take me for a short ride aboard one of the available ships. Several others from the group were selected too. We entered through the same tunnel we had seen in the morning. A stupendous scout ship was waiting for us. We climbed aboard one by one. We were only five. We greeted each other and sat down on comfortable chairs located around the upper dome. There was a concave screen showing whatever was underneath the machine. Cyril told us that several scanning eyes made up the viewing screen. The takeoff was impressive. The craft flew away, slowly at first, and then surged forward tremendously. We didn't feel any pressure or discomfort, though within a few minutes we were watching the high peaks of the Andes, forests, and small hamlets and houses. There was a fabulous view of Lake Titicaca. I was finally able to see its so famous shape, like a jaguar. We approached the town. The ship stopped. Cyril told us that the altitude was 5,000 meters above sea level. We could see the setting sun, sinking quite fast, after the stand, still. We turned around to have a different view, and moved again, at low speed. Dusk gave way to night. We could see clearly a great city under the ship, which was changing position, to let us see various different views. It was Lima, the capital of Peru. We stared, apenmoved, as the ship lost altitude, oscillating like a falling leaf in the wind. It stopped again, after skimming twice over a section of Lima, a middle-class sector, according to the type of housing. The craft had several multicolored lights on, whose reflection reached the cabin. Now the lights flashed, in order to draw the attention of the people below, which was exactly what happened. We saw several people getting out of their houses, going out on the streets, looking and pointing upwards. There was quite a commotion. We watched clearly men, women, and children, and a police patrol car showed up. The policemen got out of their car and looked in our direction. It was impressive to realize that so much excitement was due to our presence. Among us, we made all sorts of comments. One person, speaking humorously, said, "I would like to jump out in a parachute." This lasted approximately 4 minutes, and I thought it couldn't possibly be ignored by the press. Besides, it was Christmas, the 24th of December, and such an event certainly should be registered in the media, or perhaps it would be considered nonsense to publish it. On the way back, it was the same routine. Another group had been taken for a different tour. When we got together for dinner, we learned from the other contactees that some had been given other types of information, restricted to the general public. They would act in a different way than us, penetrating at the executive level and very discreetly passing information, suggesting the possibility that we were being infiltrated by two different extraterrestrial societies, one dedicated to corruption, manipulation, and domination, and another one with the intention of helping, but while acting very discreetly, so as not to jeopardize the true plan, known to the Pleiadians. Even today, after all this time, I don't think there is a single person who knows fully their complete plan. Dinner was uneventful. All were very friendly. I could see how some moved their heads, meaning, incredible, wonderful. After dinner, the instructor talked to us again, reminding us of the warnings received before, about the personality who was scheduled to address us the following morning. He repeated that we were not to interrupt, not to applaud, and not to ask questions. We bade each other good night and retired to our bedrooms. It was 7:45 p.m., December 24, 1974. Some more on next file.